Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
That podcast growling, mean and angry. Hear those co-hosts shouting, it's Danger and Jay.
All right, welcome to the latest edition of Hear That Podcast Growling. Paul Danger Jr. and Jay Morrison of The Athletic. Excited to be with you. How we doing, Jay?
I'm doing great. Hamilton is a buzz today. The Little League team won their World Series game last night. The Queen of Hearts is $350,000 tonight, which I fully intend to win. So, yeah, there's a lot going on in this town.
I mean, how many people will show up at the Queen of Hearts? What's the bar?
It's the Avenue. There was a lot last week. I took a picture from the parking lot, and then my old paper, the Journal News, actually used my photo for a story they wrote on it. I went in last night to buy some tickets, and the line was out the door to buy tickets. I think the media coverage and just everybody, it's getting down to the final. There's only 9 cards left. Everybody knows it's got to hit soon. It's insane. I feel sorry for those bartenders. I mean, that's from open to close. That's all they're doing is selling tickets. Every now and then someone orders a drink.
They get tipped for selling raffle tickets.
Well, my tab was 16 because I did have a couple beers last night, and I threw the bartender a $20 tip. They're working hard, appreciate it. They're not just being angry. They're having fun with it, even though you know it's driving. It's just wearing them out. So I hope everybody else is doing the same.
If you have time, lots of time, head on out to the Avenue and maybe you'll win $350,000. You basically need your whole day. You're going to need your whole day. We'll discuss that another time. Let's talk about Bengals. We got a bunch of things we want to get to. We want to talk a little bit about the Joseph Osai injury. A lot of people have asked the same question about it, and I didn't want you to hear my answer and think that I know what I'm talking about. So I went to one of the preeminent doctors on the topic to give you an answer. So you'll hear from Dr. Mandelbaum, Dr. Bert Mandelbaum, who is more boring than his name sounds. However, he has great information in regards to the Joseph Osai injury, if you're interested. We're going to talk a little bit about the 53 cuts that are coming and some of the risers fallers, talk a little bit about where we're looking on the back of the roster as they kind of focus in on that. We're going to talk about the chase drops, of course, but through a little bit different lens. You're going to hear from offensive coordinator Brian Callahan about how they're handling it internally, and we're going to kind of discuss how they're handling it internally. We've heard from a lot of people on that. And Brian talked to me after practice yesterday, and I thought there's some really interesting stuff in there. So I'm just going to bring you a lot of that to hear from him coming up. Of course, for the millionth time, once more into the breach, my friends, should Burrow play in the preseason? What should it look like? We can discuss that. Jay, you've got some stats, preseason stats, which might not be sad as a whole, but because their preseason stats are inherently sad.
Yes, they are. But the fact that I even bothered to look these up is kind of sad. But Bengal fans, you have to take all this with a grain of salt. But it is it is reversing a trend, and it is therefore not sad, these particular stats.
So we got that, and then a little bit more on some of the practices that we've seen the last couple of days. We're about to round that out, Jay. We've got, obviously, they're starting game week prep. This is sort of regular season schedule, Sunday game. This is what it's going to be for the most part the rest of the season, and that's Tuesday, Players' Day off, Wednesday, Thursday, two of your harder practices, Friday, light walkthrough, easy practice, day off Saturday, play the game Sunday, rinse, repeat from now until January. So we're starting that now, and we'll be able to go in training camp style and watch two more practices, as is stated in the NFL-NFLPA agreement. And then the 26th, one of my favorite days of the year, Jay. They kick us out after 30 minutes.
Yes,
you don't have to stay. You don't have to stay. Not have to. I do enjoy the insight of getting to watch full practices. I really do. It's one of the best parts of our job. Training camp is fun. It is also really freaking hot right now. It has been so. This is the hottest camp I can remember, and we have been doing a lot of sweating. So we have to hang out there. There's no shade. You're just out there baking. You're trying to see what you can see while you sweat. It'll be nice after 30 minutes where they say, all right, you can go back into the air conditioning now. I'll take that for now.
Plus, the Bengals imported all these little bitey flies to bug us during practice. It's been brutal.
My legs are bitten up, but nobody wants to hear about this. Let's talk about we'll get through some news, and then we'll get into some of the bigger topics. Let's start with Osai. An injury, you know, I kind of caught wind of this early, but you know, the official stance from the team has kind of been the same the whole time. They're officially on still looking for stuff that's more conclusive, but the report's out there and can confirm it. I mean, expectation is he's out for the year with a meniscus injury. You know, it did happen in the game against Tampa, but I don't think he noticed it as much. I mean, he was feeling like maybe there's a little something going on in his knee, but you're so focused on your wrist hurting and thinking that that's a serious injury. He was just kind of like, I think he was just kind of focused on that. And then the next day is like, by the way, my knees kind of continued to hurt me too. And then they look at it and what do you find? But the meniscus injury, and it's not a light injury. It's a serious one. And he's out for the year, which is a brutal blow. Which I want to talk about in a second, but first, because a lot of you have asked the same question, and I had the same question as well. Meniscus, I hear meniscus, and I think see you in a few weeks. Mm-hmm. And you know, you see guys come back and play the next week, and I've heard that from a lot of people, and because it is, it's part of it. So I reached out to our sort of doctor helper folks, who always hook us up with some of the top docs, and thanks to them for doing that, by the way. I got Dr. Bert Mandelbaum, who is the sports medicine specialist and orthopedic surgeon at Cedars-Sinai Curl and Joke Institute in Los Angeles. He is the chief medical officer for the United States soccer team and for MLS. And he offered a thought on the different types of meniscus and how you could end up with a prognosis this long for just a meniscus injury. Here's Dr. Mandelbaum.
How you doing?
I'm curious how much of a difference there is in meniscus tears and the difference in timelines that you see depending on what those look like.
Well, I think you're asking a question that has different sides to it. And, you know, many times people say, well, what's a meniscus tear? And, you know, there's not a binary part to it. It's not either or. When you hear and you work back the thinking from you'll be out for the year, usually insinuates that this is the kind of tear that's an unstable tear. Yeah. You know, the meniscus tear is where a vulsa root, you know, the meniscus is a C-shaped structure that roots in the back and in the front. And when you pull that out of its root where it's supposed to be, then you have to put it back. You have to sew it back. You have to go through bone. And then it's going to take you about 4 to 6 months to really heal enough to play a sport like football.
Yeah.
If it's a tear where the meniscus buckets and there's a good opportunity to repair, and it's not at the root, but it's in a mid-substance and you could repair it, You put sutures in it, you put PRP in it, and it's going to take 4 to 6 months to get back. Now, if the kind of meniscus tear, the situation where it's a little flap, where you can go in there, just recontour it, you know, those are the kinds of things where they're out on a cane a few days, they start riding the bike the next day, and they're most of the time ready to play anywhere from 3 to 6, 8 weeks in that range. So there's different beasts, you know, and they're all meniscus tears, but there's different types, and they carry with it a very different prognosis.
So good to hear from him. To, you know, don't believe me, I'm not a doctor. That's why I talk to them. They tell me what we're supposed to think. The bottom line is, yes, certain types of meniscus injuries, 4 to 6 months, and that leaves you out for the year. And it sucks, you know? I mean, because that might be the best defensive debut in a preseason game I've ever seen. Because it was against, I mean, he was against the starters. He was in there early, sacked Tom Brady. He was making every play you want to see. And then to know that that's going to be the only time you see him this year, it's tough, man. It's tough.
I mean, that on its own is tough, but it's also one of their biggest area of needs. They draft 3 defensive ends, and he's now the second one that'll be out for the year, and the third one is on the rehab field currently, not believed to be serious, Cam Sample's shoulder. But this team just can't seem to catch a break when it comes to draft picks. Either they draft him and they're already hurt and they're hoping they'll get back soon and they don't, or this kind of thing happens. You know, we saw it with Jonah Williams. It seems like every year they have a major training camp injury with a draft pick. And this one really does. I mean, there was a lot of excitement about just seeing Osai in that 58, looking a lot like, you know, you talked about great debuts. I don't remember if it was Carl Lawson's first or second preseason game when he really stood out, but it was just, you just couldn't stop watching the guy. Yeah. I mean, you were there in person. I was watching it on TV, and it was, you don't even do the watch the ball thing. It was just watch 58. So it sucks for him. It sucks for the team. It sucks for the fans. It's just bad all the way around.
Yeah, I mean, I remember early, I believe it was Carl Lawson's rookie year, maybe his second year, and they went to Washington in the preseason, and he was whipping Trent Williams, and it was like, this is not a preseason thing, because that's Trent Williams, and he's out there trying, okay? And so this was on par with that. I mean, this had that same type of feel, and it's ironic the same week, you know, that we talk about Osai, we're also talking about Carl Lawson, who popped his Achilles in Jets camp, which is just freaking awful. Those of you who listen to the podcast, you know what kind of a dude Carl Lawson is. You heard him before free agency, which was maybe one of my favorite interviews ever. And he was he really wanted to start letting his personality out more, which is just hilarious and interesting and fun, and he was going to hit the New York market to do that, and they were loving him there. He was destroying camp. He was the talk of camp, as he always is, and for that to happen, it just sucks. He was really, it felt like he was about to take off, you know, I mean, no pun intended, but like, it was just, it's awful to see, but it happens, you know. All right, let's take a second and switch gears here and hear from a sponsor.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
And a part of this with Osai is you can't... The pressure was not on him. He was not the starter. He was to come in and be a rotational guy. This doesn't change his long-term prognosis. I mean, I go back to William Jackson, right? I mean, you lose him for the year as a rookie, comes in the next year and can still play great. I mean, and you still have a chance to get all the years out of him that you want. It sucks you won't see him right now. More pressure on Hubbard and Hendrickson to stay healthy, for sure, because you're going to have to lean on them more rather than rotating them out. And more pressure on the interior guys to bring the pass rush. And what do you do? Do you now use Cam Sample as the rotational pass rush? And I mean, he's got to be. You're not going to do that unless he can prove to be good. And maybe that's him coming in as the interior guy on passing downs next to Ogunjobi, with Hubbard and Hendrickson on the outside. That what they had shown in Tampa was Osai and Hendrickson on the outside and moving Hubbard inside, actually with Sample, and having that as their sort of pass rush power. I don't have a problem not taking Ogunjobi off the field necessarily, but you know, you do put more stress now on others when this goes away. But it's not like you're losing Hendrickson or you're losing Hubbard, the guys who are your starters, or you're losing Ogunjobi. I think it. The fact that you were going to work him in, it's not as big of a loss. But I mean, I think what he showed and what he could be, you know, it's still something that takes away some of your depth that you're definitely going to need at some point.
Yeah, because we saw I should have pulled these up, his exact alignment, but I don't remember seeing Cam Sample inside as much in Washington without Osai. He was more strictly an edge, and it creates an opening for Darius Hodge. I mean, he's undersized, but he is fast, and he doesn't have great strength to be an every down pass rusher. But yeah, if you can bring him in on third down and move Sam Hubbard inside, it can still look pretty good, even with the Osai injury. It sucks all the way around, but it creates a great opportunity. And they, you know, Zach is kind of downplayed, and Lou too, is kind of downplayed what Darius Hodge has done so far. I don't know if they're trying to keep it on the down low, even though the film's out there, in case they do end up cutting him and trying to sneak him through to the practice squad. But he has been impressive for an undrafted guy who changed positions. He was a linebacker in college. It's been fun to watch, and he will be definitely a guy to keep an eye on because he should get a ton of snaps in that Miami game on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, he's still Darius Hodge, undrafted free agent.
Yeah.
He's not Joseph Osai, third-round pick out of Texas. There's a ceiling there early. And these guys, I mean, guys come off the map all the time, undrafted free agent. I'm not downplaying that. But for what they wanted that spot to look like and feel like, even the best of Darius Hodge isn't going to get you to where you wanted to be. And so they brought in Noah Spence, which is really just a flyer. I mean, he just got cut by the Saints. So you're looking at, he's not going to necessarily be the answer. I mean, you're just hoping that you get lucky and some change of scenery brings something out of a guy who was a second round pick a few years ago. But you know, you're kind of searching a little bit, and it makes me wonder how open would they be? Will there be somebody at final cuts? Maybe that is a tough cut somewhere else. Or will there be a trade opportunity for you? You know, where do you have the, we talked about this last time, right? Where's your overage? Somebody you're going to have to cut that you can trade, you know, well, last year, what, Austin Kalitro for Christian Covington, right? None of that makes anybody excited. Those two names aren't going to make you perk up, but this is what we're talking about. Where's their overage? I don't know, Jay. Where do you see an overage here that someone would actually be interested in? I don't know how much I do.
I don't. I mean, the biggest overage is kicker, and I don't think anyone's going to trade for a kicker. No. I wonder, because there's still guys out there. There's still veteran guys out there that, for what, like Geno Atkins. Obviously, there's edge guys too that could come in and help. And if they decide, if they go the other way on Jesse Bates and don't sign him this year, that gives them some more leeway to go out and sign one of those guys. But he's starting from behind. I don't know. I haven't looked at enough of the other teams' rosters to see who has overages and at defensive end, and then where their needs might be and if it would match up with the Bengals. But I really don't see where the Bengals. I mean, the DBs have played so well. But they're thin at safety, even though they're top heavy there. They don't have great depth at safety, and those cornerbacks, that 5, 6, 7 cornerback spot. I don't know anybody's going to trade an edge guy for one of those.
Who's trading for Tony Brown? You know, I mean, it's just, that's what you're talking. Or maybe,
I know.
I mean, maybe you're trying to get away with a receiver, but nobody's trading for Trent Taylor.
No,
you know, nobody. I mean, they are not. I just don't see them working from a place of depth anywhere. You know what's weird? They have so many of these middle guards on offense. It might be where you're talking about, because I think you're looking at a chance of them keeping 11. They probably keep 10. But I mean, where you could see them, but who's trading for Michael Jordan?
Right.
Who's trading for, I mean, maybe if you went all of a sudden decide you're not going to start Xavier Suofilo, you would trade him. These are things that I just don't see. I don't see. And maybe they are. Maybe somebody's in such a hard up way that they would be interested. But I don't see them having trade ability to add there. I think you turn internally. You know, a guy we haven't talked about because there's been injury there, but we talked about him before camp started, was Khalid Kareem, who was thought, well, the injury really slowed him, and you're really going to get that jump and see who he can actually be this year when he's fully healthy. He needs to get fully healthy. You got to turn to him at some point too. And these people that you have here to develop, you've stockpiled the position the last couple of years of young people. Somebody's got to come through and fill in.
And it's the same story for Kareem. He's behind again. He missed a couple weeks of practice. Now he's back. He just recently came back. But how quickly can he give you some sort of impact off the edge? That you're right. That is probably their best option at this point. But what was he, a fifth round pick? So again, it's right there. He's not third round pick Joseph Osai. It's never going to look the way they wanted it to look, but he's not an undrafted guy who's just learning the NFL like Hodge. He does have a year in the league, and got a decent amount of snaps last year. His injury was in camp. I think he played all 16 games. He played a lot on special teams. So maybe that is a guy that another one that should get a lot of snaps against Miami to kind of see where he's at.
And the bottom line is the defense is the last thing you're worried about right now. Because true, they've played really well, and including against Washington for, you know, whatever, two or three series against their starters. And, you know, they seem to really be coming together. I mean, Logan Wilson has played really well. He had the forced fumble. He's made a lot of plays. The corners have been really good. And don't forget, you now have Mike Hilton, who's one of the best blitzing slots in the NFL, who can help make up for that a little bit too, where you're a little bit more attacking in that way. DJ Reader has looked spry. He had a lot of plays in a small sample size for somebody coming back from injury. I'm not concerned there yet. Again, it's a reserve piece. So from a unit that's played really well and looked really good, and I think expectations are higher than we thought they would be. So, as somebody tweeted at me something about, oh, why does this happen every year? I'm on the brink. I'm on the bridge. I'm going to jump. I don't want to do this anymore. I'm so sick of it. And I was like, man, if an injury to a third round backup defensive end is going to send you to the brink, like, football ain't for you as a sport, because this happens everywhere, every team, every year. And it will happen to more prominent players than this on the Bengals team this year and on every team this year. This is what the NFL is. NFL's attrition. NFL's depth. Stars and depth. Who's your quarterback? Who are your other stars? Where's your depth? Because that's how you win in the long run. And so you got to be able to handle Joseph Osai going out. And they probably got to be able to handle two more dudes on that defensive line going out for a game or two, or maybe hopefully not longer than that, but that's what it is. Elsewhere on the 53, there are, to me, there's some other comings and goings. I have some of this in Risers and Fallers. If you go to theathletic.com, subscribe, of course, to get all of our coverage. But I was kind of riding on Risers and Fallers a little bit. And there's a few guys that you mentioned, Darius Hodge. I think the Osai injury puts him on the 53. Yeah. I mean, at this point, it'd be really hard to see them not having him as not just 53, but active on game day, which he was maybe on the bubble before. So he's a beneficiary of that unfortunate injury. And I mean, Jalen Davis has to be on now. The guy's for sure played it. He's earned it. And he looks a hell of a lot better than Tony Brown or whatever. And he can play the slot. He's made plays in coverage in Tampa. And he made plays tackling and putting his, you know, his face in the fan in Washington. Three stops. Not tackles, stops, plays for an offensive failure. I just think he's kind of shown that he can do it. He's obviously he's motivated. I mean, he's not going to be a shutdown corner, but for a guy who can get you through a few games and now has some confidence rolling, I like it. And your backup set up, because before, if you kept Tony Brown, Darius Phillips is kind of bumping inside to be your backup slot to Mike Hilton. I like this better. I like Phillips better on the outside, and I know he's undersized. I know he's not, you know, Lord knows we know the Darius Phillips story about the pluses and minuses, but I just like him better on the outside where it's more time to make plays on the ball and maybe get some picks versus inside. And I think this allows you to do that with him as the outside backup. So I just, you know, he's got to be on the team.
Well, yeah, you talk about what we've seen in the games, but what fans don't see, what we see every day in practice, you're writing down 35 a couple times. He's making plays consistently in practice. And I think Darius Phillips, too, is kind of an underrated. We talk so much about the rise of Jalen Davis and how good the starters are playing. Phillips has played pretty well in both those preseason games, and he's always, like you said, he's that undersized guy. You're always worried about the injury risk. And if he's going to win that punt return job, that's just more chance to take some shots. But he is quietly had a really impressive camp. Those DBs have really kind of been the stars of camp so far.
Yeah, I'd agree. And Phillips, you know, because he's smaller, you're still going to see what you saw, you know, that with the Dyami Brown catch, where they're going to throw up top over top of him and try to take advantage of him that way, the same way they did with Donovan Peoples-Jones in the game winner against Cleveland last year. I mean, that's going to be the thing, but sometimes he's going to get you picked off, and that's important too. And for a guy who's your fourth or fifth corner, you know, that's part of the profile.
Hey, you've got some pretty good safeties to give him some help over the top as well.
Absolutely. The other side of that is you mentioned Phillips with the punt return job. I think we've got clarity at the back of the receiver room somewhat, in that Trent Irwin has become part of the punt return group out there now. And that says, okay, and Darius has been the number one punt returner. So it's, to me, it says, all right, Darius, if you're going to be the backup corner, we're not as worried about you taking hits and punishment, and you're free to be our punt returner and our safety punt returner, you know, would be in the old Alex Erickson role is Trent Irwin. And they put him back there to make sure he can handle it. They assume he could. He was not a guy out there catching punts at the beginning of camp. And they would, you know, they'd have four or five guys back there rotating through during practice. He is now, and he is in games. And I think they've seen everything they want to see from him. And because he's been really good as a receiver, and he's beat out Trent Taylor, who you kind of thought was going to be that six guy potentially. But I think it's Trent Irwin now, and I think he's got a pretty solid lock on it to the point that I don't know how much we're going to even see of him on Sunday.
Yeah. Trent Taylor has been, he's had drop issues of his own quite a bit in practice. And I think that's a big part of this, where Trent Irwin takes shots to the head and still holds on to the ball. And you mentioned that the punt return rotation. I mean, they always would have Tyler Boyd back there fielding punts in practice, just as kind of that emergency guy. And he's not even doing that anymore. It feels like that they've kind of removed that as an option. And Trenton Irwin is going to be that guy where if Darius can't do it, he would step in. It just, you can really read the tea leaves here that Trenton Irwin is going to, and he played all right when he came in last year and got some games in the slot, late in the year with Brandon Allen thrown to him. It was enough of a showing, and they really liked him coming out of Stanford. They tried to get him as a undrafted free agent, and he went to Miami, and then Miami ended up cutting him, and they went right back at him and got him here again. So this is a guy they've been high on for a long time, and he's taken advantage of his opportunity. And he's on my 53 at this point. I can't see anything that would change that on Sunday.
The story that was told to me in passing when the first year that Irwin was here, so a year and a half ago, whatever, was that in practice he was roasting Darqueze Dennard, and at the part of that conversation, it was more about Darqueze and like trying to figure out if they were going to bring him back, what he is, and we wonder now, looking back on it, how much of that was Trent Irwin being a kind of a surprise. That was that's a real corner in the league who has continued to play in the league. I think you've seen parts of that. And every time we talk about Irwin, people talk about him as a surprise. If you're talking to a coach, they say, yeah, it's been great to see the continuation of what they've seen in the last few years. And that's somebody who was been on the practice, but you know, Alex Erickson had that lockdown, right? Like he had lots of NFL snaps as the backup slot and a punt returner, and he was reliable and trustworthy, and you knew who he was, and that's what you want out of that position, the backup. So, I mean, that's what you want, some sort of understanding of what you have, reliability. I mean, I think Irwin, this is his chance to, you know, to be that, if and maybe be more, and who knows, but I definitely think he's earned that, and I'll say locked it up. I would think you're right. I don't see anything changing on Sunday outside of, you know, injury changing something. Outside of that, I mean, battles. I think Chris Evans will be your third running back. We still have Travion Williams is now back, but what can he do in a game where it's all reserves out there to make anybody believe that he has to stay when you're looking at lots of other positions where you need depth at? Evans has been an unbelievable receiver. He had another great catch on a wheel route on Monday. And I just think, you know, he's shown too much of what he can be in that role to not. And I think you'll get Travion Williams on the practice squad. So I think he's kind of won that one when we're looking at battles and risers and fallers.
Yeah, and I thought Chris Evans, I mean, he didn't have a great game running the ball, but I thought he showed improvement from game one to game two, running inside and not doing what they told him. You know, four of their five negative plays against Tampa were Chris Evans runs, and they said you can't make those kind of moves that you made at Michigan, and he took that to heart, and he was hitting the hole, and he's not a big guy, but he ran hard inside, and that's still part of his development, as will be pass pro. But man, he is something else as a receiver. The wheel route you were talking about, it was from Brandon Allen, and it almost looked like Brandon Allen overthrew him, and Chris Evans kind of hit another gear and had to like really reach out. It didn't just drop into his hands. He had to reach out and get it, and he made it. And we just seen him make those kind of catches over and over again in practice.
If you're looking for it, Joe Dan and Fox 19 had great video of it. I retweeted to take a look. You can see how Evans chases it down and catches it on his fingertips and keeps going. It was just a really nice play, but something that we've seen a lot from him during camp. All right, let's just take a quick break.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with The Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Well, as we talk a little bit about drops and nice catches, let's hop into the Ja'Marr Chase conversation here. Here's what I want to talk about. So let's recap where we're at. Obviously, we know what happened in the game. On Friday, we talked about it in the walkout. What to make of these drops? What are they? Are they something? Are they nothing? Are they point of concern? You know, I think what has happened is you see, look, the we're only a few weeks away from the opener. This is not about Ja'Marr Chase's career. This is not about who he can be in the end, okay? This is about who is he right now. He's going up the learning curve to get to who he's going to be eventually. How long is that going to take? Because in the meantime, this team has to go win games. And a lot's riding on them going to win games early in this season with this schedule, with the pressure on the staff, everything. So how long will that take for him to get up to speed and be comfortable to a point where he's not thinking about it? He's not slow with his eyes. He's not dropping the ball. Well, so you think, okay, just a game, come back, bounce back. Well, Sunday's practice, first ball, in 11s thrown to him, drop, plain out drop. Then later on, next ball he sees in 7-on-7, runs a great route along the back of the goal line in a red zone drill. Burrow puts an absolute dime right on him, drop, interception Von Bell running the other way. And it's like, what is going on here? Chase kind of comes around. He lets out a loud F-bomb. Burrow comes over, gives him a tap on the helmet. Then he walks over and he's kind of standing by himself, you know, with the towels as they break for the next drill. And CJ Uzomah kind of comes over to him and talks to him for a second, gives him a little shoulder pat and moves on. Everybody understands this is an issue. Everybody understands this is something he's going to have to work through. And they're all trying to help him. To me, the conversation right now is, how are they trying to help him? A. And B, how long will that take? So then with that, C, does that mean early on you need to ease him in snaps-wise with giving a little bit more to a guy like Auden Tate, who, by the way, catches everything, as part of the easing in process? So those are sort of, the topics out there at this point. Let's start with me talking with offensive coordinator Brian Callahan after practice on Monday about a lot of the things surrounding that, which included Ja'Marr Chase having a really nice day Monday where he caught a couple of balls, including a really nice touchdown in a red zone drill, kind of twisting, grabbing the ball at the front pylon. So on a day that the whole Bengals offense had good, even hit a deep ball to T. Higgins. But let's talk about Chase here. Here's Brian Callahan.
How you doing?
with like the stuff with the drops, how do you work with something like that? Is that a don't work on it as much? It's like, I don't know if it's like better out of mind for a guy that's never had a problem with it, or it's easier to just like, no, let's talk about it, let's rep it, let's figure out how to fix it. What's the, is there a balance in there?
There's a balance.
Yeah.
And to me, the balance is always going to be, anybody can go out there and be like, catch the ball.
Yeah.
You're like, great coaching point.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
What you try to do, it's almost like anytime you're in a slump, right? You don't really want to talk about the slump. You just kind of got to work your way through it. And me yelling and getting all mad and Zach getting all mad and everybody getting on him all the time doesn't do any good. Like, he knows he's supposed to catch the ball. And so you balance that with what are you doing specifically? What is the problem? Are your eyes late? Are your hands late? What is the core of the issue? Are you worried about what's around you? What is it that we're missing? Are your eyes coming off the ball when you're going to make the catch, which have happened a few times? And you try to work on those things as opposed to the actual just catching of the football. You try to find what it is that's causing the drop, or what's uncomfortable at the catch point that, you know, maybe he feels that we don't know. Yeah. Maybe he, as he comes out of the break, the ball got on him way faster than he thought it was going to. Now his eyes and hands are late and it jumps on him and now it's a drop. And so there's a ton of drills. Troy's always doing stuff with them. They're probably out here right now somewhere. Yeah. But Troy does a lot of like tennis ball drills.
Yeah.
So tennis balls off of walls, eye hands, the tracking balls, moving through all those things. Like, there's things you can do to drill it without making it feel like just catch the ball, and then all you're thinking about is catching the ball, and then it just spirals out of control. And that's, you try to avoid that part where you're saying, man, just if you don't talk about it, just work through it, and you find your way through. It's like,
you don't want to make it more of a mental thing, right? It's like, because when something like that comes out of nowhere, it's confusing for everybody. Because it's like, but it happens. Like, we were talking with T and with TB today, and everybody goes through stretches at some point, has it. It's just a matter of like working through it. But for you, when you, it feels worse when you're okay. We're now 20 days from the opener, right? That's when it kind of feels like a little more than it would be.
You feel the urgency.
Yeah.
You know, you feel what it's like. This is happening for real here, really fast. Like, it's not April anymore. You know, we're playing in a very short amount of time, and it counts. And you only get so many of those opportunities.
Yeah.
And so you do feel that. I think like a good example is like Shermer fumbled like maybe. At one point, it felt like he fumbled at least two snaps a day for like five straight days.
Yeah.
And it was just the same thing. It was like you get so far in your own head that an act of something so simple, taking a snap or just catching the ball, becomes this monster that you got to get. So you try to keep it from getting to that point where it's like, all right, was the technique of the route right? Is he doing the right things everywhere else up to the catch point? If that's the case, then we'll work through any drop that happens.
Right.
There was a Frank Pollock sent me an article. I don't know where he had it, but there was a huge article about kind of not revisionist history, but looking back on Jerry Rice's first year in San Francisco.
Okay.
Mike Traynor wrote it, I think maybe in 2006 or something like that.
Okay.
It's like some anniversary piece on that. Well, they talked about, like, the fans were booing him. He was almost benched. Like, all this stuff.
Yeah.
And Bill Walsh had to stand up in front of the media and be like, nope, it's going to come. He's going to be fine.
Yeah.
Like, it was a whole big thing, which I never remembered. I was, like, a year old when that happened.
Yeah.
But I thought it was just an interesting piece. Like, here's arguably the greatest receiver in the history of football.
Yeah.
Had struggles as well that he had to work through. It's just part of it, I think.
Do you send that along to Jamar? Like, hey, I mean, Jerry Rice. Like,
yeah, I think, I mean, he sent it, Frank sent it to me and Troy and Zach as just kind of a, I don't know where he got it or if he, because he was with that team, I think maybe 3 years later after that, but, you know, he knew some of the things that went on. I think he was kind of sharing his perspective of, this isn't the first time this has ever happened.
Right. Well, it's like, we were talking with T last year and about how, you know, the first couple of games, I mean, he wasn't even really hardly in there, the hamstring, and he was still really figuring things out, catches a couple of touchdowns in Philly, and then it just sort of like starts to build on itself. Yeah. And like, and that's a very, very normal progression.
Yes.
You know, but because you're number five overall and you're going to be the starter and you're replacing A.J. Green, people think you're going to be 2015 A.J. Green from day one, and that's just a hard thing to try to live up to.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, if I remember correctly, A.J. had struggles too.
Yeah,
first year.
He only caught one ball in the opening.
Yeah.
We have this game when he touched down, but he was only one.
It was only one. But it's, you know, it's hard. It's hard to make the transition because everything's faster, everybody's better. The things that you were generally better at than whoever you played against don't show up anymore. You have to be, detailed. You have to be sharp in what, what your plan is versus whatever coverage you're seeing. You have to see the coverage. You have to feel the leverage. You got to do all these things that generally are pretty new.
Yeah.
Even at the highest, even Jamar, who played against like 7 or 8 drafted corners, those aren't 8-year veterans that have played a lot of football that aren't afraid of you, you know?
Yes.
So it just, and it's good. It's been good for him. His learning curve has been steep, and he's managed to get through it, but it hasn't been without its issues.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's office coordinator Brian Callahan, as we talked after practice, about all these types of things. Here's what I loved. I loved Frank Pollock sending the story about Jerry Rice to Zach Taylor and Brian Callahan, the story about how Bill Walsh had to stand up in front of the media Jerry Rice's rookie year and tell everybody it's going to be okay. He's going to be fine. He's not a bust. I'm going to keep playing with him. You'll see. I'm going to stick with him. While the whole media in San Francisco freaked out about, is it his gloves? Like, is it his hands? Is he working too hard? Is his work ethic not good enough here? What's going on with this guy, Rice? This isn't going to work out. And eventually it worked out. But it was Jerry Rice rookie bust was the story, right? And it was all about the proper retrospective. And I actually went back and found the link to the story from it's on Football Outsiders by Mike Tanier. He wrote it in 2006. But Frank Pollock remembered it because he was with the Niners in 1990. And that was part of the story at that point when people would laugh about how good Jerry Rice was and about how I guess he wasn't a bust. So, again, this isn't about his career. But there is stuff in there about how to handle this. At a certain point, you just got to believe in the guy. And they are. I'd say that, Jay, right? I mean, there has been zero backing down of standing totally behind Jamar Chase and just helping him work through it and understand that he's going to get through this and be fine.
Yeah, every guy you talk to says that. He's going to be great in this league. He's going to be fine. I remember talking to CJ Uzama last week. It was last Tuesday because Jamar Chase had this great practice and it felt like he'd turned a corner and then it went back south again after that. And CJ talking about how, like, he would give him shit when he dropped the ball. And that was, you know, his way of trying to kind of loosen him up and, you know, maybe trying to make him laugh and shake it off and move on to the next play. And that's not what was going on that practice on Sunday. When CJ approached him, he kind of did, you know, like a little everything's going to be okay shoulder massage and kind of patted him on the shoulder, and you could tell it's different. And I asked T. Higgins that, because I wonder if a rookie comes in and he's lighting it up and then he has a drop, maybe he gets some razzing in the film room when they're watching the film of practice. And I wonder if there was some of that early, that where it wasn't just CJ, it was other guys kind of talking shit to him. And then if that has changed where they're like, okay, maybe we need to lay off that a little bit and let this guy work through it. It was noticeable that, yes, they're always going to cheer and celebrate when the offense scores a touchdown, but there was a little more to it yesterday when Chase caught that ball at the front pylon that you were talking about, the kind of the twisting catch. You could tell that. I think everybody kind of exhaled there a little bit. It's like, okay, that's who they drafted. That's what they expect. And, you know, every time he makes a play like that, you just think he's turned the corner. It's gonna come around. You don't know how it would be great to be inside those meetings and see how he's approached, but it does feel like, you know, they've kind of dialed back a little bit, and it's not even saying everything's going to be okay can get in a guy's head. Just if there's a drop, sometimes the best thing to do is not approach them and let them work it out on their own.
Yeah. Brian kind of talked about that a little bit, about the mental balance of, let's not make this a mental issue. I don't need to tell you, you need to catch the ball. You don't need to hear me say that. No one needs to yell at anybody about that stuff. It's not an issue. It is an issue. Let's talk through how to work through it if we need to. But really, I go back to T. Higgins and Tyler Boyd, who we talked to on Monday, and it was them talking about their first couple of years. And Higgins last year, I mean, people forget. I mean, he had the hamstring thing, but he was healthy the first couple of games. He just didn't play much. John Ross did. And it took Higgins a while to really kind of get going. And he has a game in Philly where he catches a couple touchdowns to give him some confidence, but he also has a drop on a ball where he said he showed his hands too early that would have probably won them the game. And he still remembers it clearly to that day. Snaps off the answer to a drop that he remembers about. That's the one. Like, that's what stands up. And that's week three last year. And then by the time you got kind of a couple weeks after that, the Indy game, when he really goes off and catches the deep ball, then T. Higgins starts to roll and start to become himself. You're at midseason at that point. What really is the difference between, and this is any rookie receiver, you get spoiled watching Justin Jefferson. That is the outlier, man. Like, these guys may be able to come in and play fast sometimes. That happens. That is the outlier. The average of a really good receiver is probably more like what you saw from even, and Higgins is kind of on the outlier, of really, it takes you some time. By the time you hit midseason, you really start to hit your stride. Because you're number five overall and all those things, it's like, man, there's that, he needs to come in and be that dude. Like we said, A.J. Green caught one ball in his first game. It was a game-winning touchdown, but he caught one ball, and they weren't covering him. It's like, it takes time, even for the great ones. And so this is not about his career. So let's go back to the other part of the question we asked before this. How long do you wait? How do you handle that waiting time? I think you have to be having real conversations about what role Auden Tate can have in easing this transition to help it not cost you games. Right? Am I off on this? Am I being crazy?
No. I mean, third down, that's where, if Jamar Chase has a drop on first or second down, you know, it's like a penalty. It sets you back, but you can overcome it. If you have a drop on third down, you're punting. And Auden Tate is just kind of built to be a third down guy. I could see them really kind of limiting Jamar's snaps on third down and maybe even give him a series off and let Auden Tate get in there for the better part. Maybe not an entire series if it ends up being a long drive, but let Auden Tate start a series and ease Jamar Chase in. The flip side of that is, you know, do you target him a lot early and try to get him going? Because yes, that could be the outcome of that. If he has two catches, three catches on a couple targets on the opening drive, all of a sudden, maybe all those drops are forgotten and he just takes off. The other side of it, of course, is if the drops happen again early in the season opener, how much does he get back in his own head and where does it go from there? It's a delicate balance, but I do think we're going to see, particularly early, the first quarter of the season, that we're going to see a lot more of Auden Tate than maybe we expected when they drafted Jamar Chase.
Yeah, I think you take it week by week, you know, and you do this with a lot of rookies. I mean, ease them in. There's no need to shove him in there 90%, you know. Give him a chance to dip his toes in the water a little bit. Is that a 70-30 split in favor of Chase? Is that 60-40? Is, you know, what is that? Is it 50-50? I don't know. They got to figure out what that is. Maybe it's certain packages that go by feel even in the game. You know, if Chase comes in and he's playing well and he's roasting Patrick Peterson and he's catching the ball, then don't worry about it. But you just kind of see as you go there, and then you assess that and go week to week, and eventually you'll end up at the point where Jamar Chase is your guy. Is that week two? Is that week three? Is that week nine? I don't know. But I think for week one, I think you have to have some, and Auden Tate was always going to have a role. But how much of a role was sort of, you wouldn't think in a role that would be taking Jamar Chase off the field a lot. And it won't end up that way, but I think early on you got to consider it. I asked Zach Taylor about that specifically. Do you need to start to consider Auden Tate and how he can help Jamar Chase? And the answer was, that's exactly the type of stuff that can help Jamar Chase, is we have a lot of other people that have been very consistent and reliable that can help him acclimate. It was a very long-winded answer that wasn't necessarily a direct answer to the question of, like, is he going to play more? But it wasn't a denial at all. And it was saying, yeah, all T. Higgins, Tyler Boyd, the tight ends have been consistent. Tate has been consistent. Like, you know what he is. All of those guys being there as other options take the pressure off of Chase. And I think that's what they want to do. They want to they don't want this guy to feel that kind of pressure that is being cast upon him from the outside, that has been cast upon him since the moment they drafted him, you know, and it doesn't help. I'm sure he doesn't notice, but everybody else does when, you know, the team's commercial, like the Bengals draft, Jamar Chase is like how they pump up the, you should come to the games. You know, it's like all this stuff. It's like that's what they're leaning into. That's what the expectation is. And it's a lot on a guy that's out there. And then when you start getting in your own head is when it becomes a problem. And they just can't let that be what's happening now.
Yeah, and you mentioned the T. Higgins play and how he overcame that. Tyler Boyd had, I mean, he didn't hesitate at all either. When we asked him if he had a play, he went right to his debut game against the Jets and remembered a specific play. And then if people remember week two that year, they were in Pittsburgh driving for the game-winning score, and Tyler Boyd fumbled. And, you know, that was not a good start for a rookie wide receiver. And he came through that pretty well. And it wasn't an instantaneous turnaround like T. Higgins, because Tyler Boyd's second year, he was actually inactive for a couple of games.
No, Tyler Boyd had 2 years where he was basically a non-factor. I mean, his first year was good. That second year was a total non-factor, healthy scratches.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, healthy scratch a few games. And then all of a sudden, year three, it just turns around. You hope it doesn't take year three for Jamar Chase. But it just shows that, yes, no matter how good a guy is, they all have stories like this where there was a slow start. Very rarely does somebody just hit the ground running and light the league on fire. And it's still super early. Jamar's under a microscope as the number 5 overall pick, and the drops have been more than what you would expect, which just kind of creates a bigger narrative around it. But kind of going back to your column, just pump the brakes on it a little bit, give it time to work itself out. Be interesting to see what happens Sunday, how early and often they target him. We don't know how much the starters are going to play in that game, but it sounds like they are. Just the fact that Zach is weighing the decision whether Trey Hopkins and Joe Burrow will even play, that leads you to believe that, yes, the starters are going to be out there.
So, which leads us into one last time.
Willie won't.
we'll be back later this week and we'll know the answer. So this is the last time I guess we debate it without knowing. You know, the preseason thing, I've kind of stated the opinion so many times on it. If this is what Joe Burrow needs, if he needs to check this box, if he tells you, look, I need this, not I want to play, I need to play to really feel like I've checked that last box before Minnesota, then put him out there. Don't coach scared. Put him out there for a series or whatever you want and let him run some safe stuff and call it a day. Like at some point he's got to go out there. And if he needs that, then give it to him. If he says, I want to play because I want to play because I'm Joe Burrow and I want to play all the time, then that's different. Would you be fine against Minnesota without it? Sure. Do I want to play? Yeah. Then the answer is it's not necessary then. I think that's what it is. Ask the guy. I want to know what he feels like he needs. And once you know that, then there's your decision. I mean, there's so many ways to go out there and put him out there for a series and not, you know, be concerned. Do safe stuff. Keep it conservative. It's not hard.
And you've put so much on him. The trust is there that you have to trust his answer. If he does say he needs it, that he truly does need it, he's not just saying it because he wants to play. But it's, I mean, the league changed last year. It's one of those things where, you know, an unintended consequence where there was no preseason last year. And I think everyone's kind of realized that maybe these quarterbacks don't need to play in the preseason. Totally different situation, obviously, with Burrow coming off the injury. But it's been, I don't want to say amazing, but it's been noticeable how few starting quarterbacks are playing in the preseason. I mean, I went and looked it up. And there's only 6 starting quarterbacks that have thrown double-digit pass attempts so far in the league. There's 17 starting quarterbacks that have yet to throw a single pass in the preseason. Aaron Rodgers hasn't thrown a pass in the preseason since week 2 of 2018. and he was 2-for-4 in that game. I mean, he's a totally different animal altogether. But I think you're seeing a trend turn here where the injury risk is too great, and you don't feel like you need to stick them out there. Now, maybe that all changes. I guess every team's going to approach week three different. Is it going to look like the old week three where it's a dress rehearsal? Is it going to look like the old week four where it's all scrubs? But it is noticeable. And those guys that have thrown double digit passes are rookies like Trevor Lawrence, who they're trying to get settled in, or guys that are in position battles where maybe they're the leading candidate to start, but it's not settled yet. Jameis Winston, Drew Lock, Cam Newton, Tua. The one outlier there is Patrick Mahomes. He's thrown 20 passes already, an established MVP in the league. But everybody else down are Andy Dalton 4, Jimmy Garoppolo 3, Tom Brady 2. And then you got this whole list of zeros with Joe Burrow, Baker Mayfield, Justin Herbert, Dak Prescott, another injured guy. But it's just... It just feels like last year woke people up to the fact that, yeah, that you don't really need it. It might help to play him, but you don't need to play him.
Right. I think the only time you will see quarterbacks play in the preseason anymore is in unique situations. Rookie, guy coming back from injury that needs it. That Burrow would be one of the, he's sort of one of those tweener situations where it's like, do you need it? Do you not? With the rest of it, I feel like, Justin Herbert, no. You know, any of these guys that have played that are solid, there's no battle, there's no issue, they're just coming, they're not going to play. They're not. They're not going to throw, they're not going to drop back. I agree with you, Jay. I think this is just part of what the preseason is, and I don't think it will make that big of a difference. I think it will take two series against Minnesota for Burrow to be back exactly where he needs to be, and that's fine. That's everybody's going to be going through that in some respect.
Yeah,
you have other preseason stats.
I do. You know,
look at you.
I said this earlier. It is preseason stats, so take it for what it is. But I mean, what was everybody talking about last year and free agency this year is the Bengals' offensive line and the defensive line. Can they protect the quarterback? Can they go get the quarterback? Well, through 2+ weeks of the preseason, the Bengals are tied for first in pressures per game with 8.5. And this is according to Sport Radar, who their pressure numbers are a little lower. I think Pro Football Focus is a little more generous with the numbers they give on pressures, but it was easier to look at an entire team ranking on Sport Radar, so I went that direction. Bills and Bengals tied 8.5 pressures per game. Pressures allowed per game, Bengals tied for second with 2, and Denver Broncos first with 1.5. Sacks allowed, Bengals tied for first, 1 with New England. I mean, even though the numbers are a little lighter on Sport Radar than they are Pro Football Focus, they're still the same for everybody. And to have the Bengals at the top of the league in those three categories, even though it's preseason, it's still a meaningful turnaround for an area for two areas that they had to have that kind of turnaround.
One thing I want to point out was something we didn't talk about in the game against Washington, and that was Chase Young. He had 10 pass rushes and no pressures, and Jonah Williams was perfect against him. And that's something. That's a real guy. That's like goes back to the Carl Lawson, Trent Williams thing. He was out there trying to get after the quarterback, and the dude that, you know, absolutely just annihilated Cam Newton the week before and doesn't get back there. There have been a lot of great reviews about what Jonah Williams has been in camp and thus far to make people believe that he's going to have a really good year, a year where he takes a pretty big jump. And so I think that was something notable that no one's really talked much about from the other day, but that plays into the pressures thing as well. When you're talking about feeling like you have something really solid at left tackle that can go a long way.
Absolutely. And there, it wasn't all, I mean, there were some short passes, but there, Brandon Allen dropped back and threw some deeper ones too. It wasn't like just quick, get the ball out where there's not really going to be a chance to get pressures. So encouraging sign for Jonah, encouraging for the entire offensive line that they are keeping the quarterback upright.
And we should mention, I briefly mentioned it earlier, the first real Burrow deep ball connection happened on Monday in Monday's practice. Joe Burrow with a deep ball, 40, 50 yards. Hard for us to tell because we're stuck back behind it in the other end zone. But 40, 50 yard bomb to T. Higgins over the top of Bates and Bell, who were sucking up a little bit on Jamar Chase running underneath them. And Burrow drops a dime. Higgins catches it. Deep ball touchdown. Big sigh of relief from some of the coaching staff on that one. Been waiting for that and needing to see that happen. We've all kind of been wanting to see it. And I think that's something as we get closer now, within weeks of the opener, a big deal, big play from Monday's practice to get people feeling better about the state of the offense.
And Burrow hit Higgins in a red zone for a red zone touchdown too, and threw it kind of the way he needs to when he throws to him, and Auden Tate puts it up there where only those guys can get it. And Higgins went up, made a nice catch. It was a good day for the offense. Not just Jamar Chase, no drops, had a touchdown, but all the way around that deep ball, the one that to CJ Uzama last week was just a easy one. He got so far behind the defense because it's kind of a play action short yardage thing where they sucked everybody up. This one, that was the true good coverage down the field shot to T. Higgins. And that's the guy. If you were putting money on who would be the one that would get the first real connection, I think that's the guy that everybody expects. So it was good to see after, where are we now? 3 weeks in, 4 weeks in, 4 weeks in.
Finally can talk about what T. Higgins arrow up season is upon us, by the way, continues to be as people are going through their fantasy drafts. He's the one. He's the one that is probably, I don't know ADP on T. Higgins right now, as I'm still weeks away from my draft, but I'm going to tell you that he probably should be higher than whatever his ADP is right now. All right, that will wrap. Oh, no, you have Bengals growler bet. We have to recap from last week. I lost. Jay won. That's all I want to talk about it. We just end that right there. Be done with it. We'll have a new growler bet for the game Sunday. We'll have that in Thursday's episode when we take a closer look at Miami and everything that's going on there as we get ready to wrap up the preseason, thank God. So, all right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. I hope you enjoyed the show. We will talk to you next time on Hear That Podcast Growling. Have a good one, everybody.